This is the Ending Human Trafficking Locally and Globally podcast. Not only will you learn more about the subject pertaining to the topic of human trafficking, but you'll also find out ways that you can take action against it. Did you know that April 4th is Landmine Awareness Day? I'm Tori Corbello, and we have an interesting episode for you today about children with disabilities. So why are we doing this podcast? Just to give you a sense of the scope of the issue, it's estimated that one out of every 20 children aged 14 or younger, that's 93 million children around the world, are living with a moderate or severe disability of some kind. Our former executive director of UNICEF, Anthony Lake, kicked off UNICEF's State of the World's Children flagship report of 2013, stating, somewhere, a child is being told he cannot play because he cannot walk, or another that she cannot learn because she cannot see. That boy deserves a chance to play, and we all benefit when that girl and all children can read, learn, and contribute. He hits the nail right on the head. UNICEF believes in not just protection of children, but also ensuring that every child thrives to his or her full potential. Stop and think about that for a second. How often do we actually make intentional efforts to reflect about children with disabilities, and how often do we support them? How often do we think about whether our buildings are accessible for those with mobility concerns? Are our resources accessible for those who are deaf or blind? These are questions I've thought quite a bit about over the last couple of years, so I've invited two guest speakers to provide a little bit more insight on the topic. Our first guest is Kara Elizabeth Yar Khan, born in India and raised in Canada. She began her international career in Ecuador with the United Nations World Food Program, during which time she also served on the board of the Canadian-Ecuadorian Chamber of Commerce. Kara's international career then reached into the private sector for 3 years as a senior manager of corporate communications and government relations for Dell Inc. in Panama, and then as a private consultant in China. In 2007, Kara joined the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF Angola, as a fundraising officer who specialized in working with extractive industries. Kara's experience with multi-million corporate partnerships led to a year with UNICEF China to support the Sichuan earthquake emergency response, followed by UNICEF assignments in Madagascar, Mozambique, Thailand, and finally Haiti, where she served as the Resource Mobilization Specialist and Disability Focal Point for 2 years after the devastating 2010 earthquake. In 2013, Kara moved to the USA as a UNICEF Child Protection Specialist, spending most of her time as a spokesperson and international program advisor to the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. Today, Kara is the founder of her own consulting firm. With a BA in International Development from the University of Guelph, Canada, and a Master's in International Public Policy from Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, Bologna, Italy. She has a working knowledge of French, Mandarin, Chinese, and Portuguese, and is fluent in Spanish. Thanks so much for joining us today, Kara. I think it would be helpful to have a description of what disability means.
Sure. Disability is really an evolving concept. And we look at disability when it results from the interaction between persons or children with impairments and the attitudinal or the environmental barriers that hinder their full and effective participation in society on an equal basis with others. So when we think about children with disabilities, that includes those who have long-term physical, mental, intellectual, or sensory impairments, and in which the interaction with various barriers may hinder their full and effective participation in society on an equal basis with others. So the important distinction here is that disability is not considered the medical condition, but rather it's the result of that interaction between the negative attitudes or the unwelcoming environment with the condition of the particular child. So what we try to do is dismantle those attitudinal and environmental barriers as opposed to treating children with disabilities as problems that need to be fixed, so that those children can then participate as active members of society and enjoy the full range of their rights.
Great. That's a helpful way to look at it. I'm going to take a step back for a second and ask, what inspired you to start your advocacy efforts for children with disabilities?
I was really honestly thrown into it. When I arrived in Haiti, which was my ninth country that I was working with, In 2010, Haiti had the devastating earthquake, and I arrived about a year afterwards to support fundraising. By that time, I was walking on leg braces and two canes to get around, because 5 years earlier, I had been diagnosed with a very rare muscle-wasting disease that affects my body from head to toe. My first day at work, I'll never remember it. It was on the logistics base at the end of the tarmac of the airport, the UN base, and Françoise Ackermans-Houlouz was the head of UNICEF there, the UNICEF rep, and she said to me, she wrapped her arms around me, she's like, congratulations, you're our disability focal point. And I was like, I think you made a mistake. I came here as a resource mobilization specialist. She's like, oh no, but we're giving you this additional role. And I said, I don't know anything about, you know, disability rights or programming or policies and budgeting, et cetera. She goes, oh, don't worry, you'll learn. Next week, you have a meeting with the Secretary of State. So that, you know, just, it was like doing a master's and PhD out of school. It completely transformed the way that my work, but also the way that I looked at my own life. And so I became a voice for the children and mothers with disabilities that we were trying to support through our work with UNICEF. And then that led to becoming a public speaker for people with disabilities around the world, and also a representative for my own journey that I'm on.
That's really neat. Thank you. And on this topic, what would you say is UNICEF's approach to mainstreaming children with disabilities?
There are 93 million children with disabilities in the world, of which 80% live in developing countries. These are where UNICEF has their country offices. We're in over 120 countries around the world. And in our work, we are proactively reaching out to survey, assess, and raise awareness about the situation of children with disabilities in each of those countries so that we can shine the spotlight on them for governments to understand the moral responsibility, legal responsibilities that they have to protect the most vulnerable and marginalized children in their countries. UNICEF works very closely with its partners, which are local and international NGOs on the ground. Remember, UNICEF is a UN agency, not an NGO. We also work with civil society, the private sector, the social sector, so health, education, nutrition, water and sanitation, child protection, especially education. And then also with children themselves, to raise awareness about the value of each of those children's lives and the wonderful contributions that they have to make and the rights that that exist to protect their survival and their engagement in society. In all of its programmatic work that UNICEF does, whether that is in education, health, nutrition, child protection, programmatic work, advocacy, communications, et cetera, we mainstream, meaning we specifically target children with disabilities because they are the most vulnerable and marginalized children in any society. That is UNICEF's equity approach. So when you look at raising up, supporting the survival and thriving of those hardest to reach, you actually amplify your efforts to reach everyone. And so this is how UNICEF engages. It's a very high level explanation of how we mainstream children with disabilities. One other point to make is that when we look at mainstreaming children with disabilities, it's about having them represented in everything that we do. So it's not only, say, the disability focal point in a UNICEF country office that's looking at children with disabilities. It's everybody's responsibility in every department, even communications, say if we are publishing a brochure about water and sanitation, to ensure that you have the representation of a child with a disability, boy or girl, in that work. So that might be showing a child in a photograph that either has, that uses a wheelchair, or that maybe a child with Down syndrome, something that's actually visible on the page in the photograph to see that there is an impairment.
Jumping off of that, I remember one of the first online images that I saw about UNICEF's work. Actually, I brought it with me today. I'll read the quote that it has. Child survivors of mines and other explosive devices live with consequences for a lifetime, which draws attention to education conducted in post-conflict countries about landmines. Can you talk more about UNICEF's landmine awareness programs?
Sure. Unlike other weapons of war, landmines and unexploded ordnance are unique. Because their destructiveness is indiscriminate. It long out last the conflicts in which they were used. They endangered generation after generation of civilians, especially children. And year after year, that battle is fought. And even when it's over, landmines remain hidden in fields and forest roads, footpaths, until someone unknowingly comes across them, steps on them, treads on them, and triggers that deadly explosion. Or a child who's playing might find it and, say, set off a mortar, an unexploded mortar. So the danger of landmines and unexploded ordnances is exacerbated for children in particular, who are intrigued by something colorful or curious in design. Butterfly mines and cluster bombs hold a fatal attraction for many young children. At present, UNICEF is undertaking mine action in over 30 mine-affected countries worldwide, coordinating a variety of programs focused on three areas. One, mine risk education. Secondly, advocacy. And third, survivor assistance. Mine risk education, which we use the acronym as we use many acronyms, MRE, aims to make people aware of the threat and enable them to live more safely with the threat. We have advocacy efforts about the stigmatization and the use of, for the use of landmines and clear other explosive remnants of war. There's also the assistance and support for children and others who are injured by those blasts. My first country office with UNICEF was Angola, and the country had come out of 30 years of civil war. You can imagine the devastation of landmines was so severe across that entire country. There was no wildlife left. It had killed off even all of the animals that were in that country. We had mapped areas where we as staff knew that there were certain areas we couldn't go, or areas even in the city of Luanda, the capital city, that were blocked off because there were still landmines there. So our work at UNICEF in Angola, in that case, is that working with our partners to ensure that this mine risk education needs were met appropriately, effectively, timely fashion, that the mine ban treaty and the related legal instruments that are universally ratified and were implemented, and that mine survivors, especially children, had access to comprehensive support services. As most of the mine casualties occur during or immediately after a conflict, in emergencies where national authorities don't necessarily exist or they're unable to respond, that's really where UNICEF steps in, where we act directly to identify those at-risk populations and carry out emergency mine risk education and support other risk reduction activities. And that can be as something, it sounds so simple, but as effective as having photographs and teaching children that these are not toys. That shiny, interesting piece of metal that they stumble across when playing, usually, or fetching water. We know that children go long distances to fetch water, is not a toy and should not only be avoided, but also should be reported. And whenever possible, UNICEF works to build that capacity of its partners so that we can spread the word even farther. And we're seeking to ensure that the initial mine action responses and life-saving assistance move rapidly towards medium and long-term solutions. Remember, nothing we do is only for immediate. We're always looking for activities that we can scale up. And this is really done with an emphasis on community participation.
Thank you for that context, Kara. And it's hard to have a conversation on this topic without talking about the Convention on the Rights of Children with Disabilities. Could you tell us what it is and why it's important and the status of the convention now?
Sure. The Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which covers children, is an international treaty that identifies the rights of persons with disabilities as well as the obligations on state parties. Those are the countries that are part of the UN, to that convention to promote it and protect it and ensure those rights. So the convention sets out human rights of persons with disabilities and those obligations of the states to protect and ensure the rights, but also the mechanisms to support the implementation and the monitoring of them. This is very similar to the work that we do on the Convention on the Rights of the Child, which these two conventions together drive UNICEF's work. The Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities identifies general and specific obligations that countries or state parties have in relation to the rights of the adults and children with disabilities. And there are some general obligations that when a country or a state party ratifies the convention, there are different, you can sign it, but not necessarily ratify it, have to put into place those obligations. So they are to adopt legislation and administrative measures to promote the human rights of adults and children with disabilities. They are to adopt legislative and other measures to abolish discrimination, protect and promote the rights of persons, so children and adults with disabilities, in policies and programs, stop any practice that breaches the rights of persons, so adults and children with disabilities, and I'll give you an example of that afterwards, ensure that the public sector respects the rights of persons with disabilities, also ensure that the private sector and individuals respect the rights of persons with disabilities. The country also has obligation to undertake research and development of accessible goods, services, technologies for people with disabilities, and to encourage others to undertake such research. They have to provide accessible information about assistive technology to persons with disabilities, whether that's larger text, sign language interpretation, assistive aids in schools, that could be walkers, it could be wheelchairs, it could be ramps, it could be special glasses to see the chalkboard. They have to promote the training on the rights of the convention to professionals and to staff who work with people with disabilities. And then they also are obligated to consult with and involve people with disabilities themselves. And as children, we do this with our work in UNICEF. We engage children with disabilities in developing and implementing rules, legislation, policies, and in the decision-making process that concern them. You look at the disability rights movement, and this includes children because they have a voice, they have unique circumstances, often because they are growing, their impairments can change, and therefore their needs change throughout their childhood. And we define a child with UNICEF, our work is from 0 to 24 because we include youth in our work. And so we need to adapt. But the only way that we can adapt is that we hear their voice and we have them involved. The UN General Assembly adopted the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities on the 13th of December in 2006, and it was opened up for signature in the next March in 2007. But it actually entered into force or became international law on the 3rd of May in 2008. So this convention protects and promotes the human rights of all people with disabilities, including children and young people. And one of the things that I said I was going to give you an example of, pardon me, which is an example of how do we abolish discrimination or adopt measures that abolish discrimination. What's an example of discrimination? In 2013, UNICEF published its flagship publication called State of the World's Children. And in 2013, the topic was children with disabilities. And in the opening of that incredible publication is a story about a boy named Michael in Tanzania. And in Tanzania, like in many countries in the world, it is illegal to hunt, to kill, or to maim children with albinism. Albinism is a genetic defect that causes a lack of melanin in the body, and therefore the children don't have any pigmentation in their skin or in their eyes. They are susceptible to sunshine, bright light. They can have skin conditions. They have eye conditions. In Tanzania, like in many countries in the world, children with albinism are hunted for their body parts, for their hair, for to be used in witchcraft because it's thought to bring good fortune to someone who takes this to a witch doctor and they cast a spell. So it is the responsibility, the legal responsibility of the government of Tanzania to fight against and to capture and persecute the poachers who are trying to hunt down children and adults with albinism, but also to raise awareness that about the condition, that this is a genetic condition, but also the value that these children to see the child first. And as mentioned in the 2013 edition of State of the World's Children, the story of Michael in Tanzania. He's one of five children, and his father insisted that all of his children, Michael and his two siblings who had albinism and the two others who didn't, went to school. The local community advocate to protect the children with albinism was a very close friend of Michael's father and lived next door. And it had been heard through the grapevine that poachers were coming to kidnap Michael, this boy, and his sibling. And he, this community advocate, pleaded and begged Michael's father to flee. And took some convincing, but they did. And the family packed up their things in the middle of the night, and they flee. They fled 500 kilometers. Days later, it had come to the attention that poachers did indeed enter their house to kidnap, kill and maim Michael and his siblings. And you can imagine their fury when they found out that somehow the family had been warned and had fled, and so they had lost their bounty, their treasure, as they saw it. And they went next door to the community advocate who they suspected had warned the family, and they cut off all of his limbs and testicles and left him there to die. It is horrific. That's a very strong example, but it's a very real example. And so it is very important that governments take quite seriously their obligations to abolish any sort of discrimination that's happening, because in many countries around the world, the consequences otherwise are fatal.
And so my last question for you, and probably one of my favorite questions, is what would you recommend that our audience do to support children with disabilities?
Absolutely. I think what everybody can do is to proactively and actively engage children with disabilities in everything that you're already doing. Ask the question, you know, so when you're at your local faith-based organization, whether it's your church or mosque or your temple, and say there are activities for children with disabilities, ask the question, are we including children with disabilities? You know, and you'll probably be surprised that people say, like, what? They say, are we making an effort to ensure that we are including everyone, that we see a clear representation of our community? If you think about it, any society, 10 to 15, sometimes up to 20% of a community are people with disabilities. Ask questions, learn. Like, often sometimes people have an idea of what they think disability means, or what does a child with a disability look like. I mean, I don't know how many times people tell me, well, you don't look like you have a disability. I mean, disabilities, as mentioned, are the largest minority in the world. People with different impairments come in all shapes and sizes. It transcends all boundaries, ethnic groups, religions, both genders. I would also say speak up for the inclusion and access of children with disabilities. Of course, as the largest minority in the world, we have a voice. Sometimes we don't use that voice, but we also need the majority, others who don't have disabilities, to speak up and be a voice on that platform so that everybody is involved. And I think be conscious of how lucky we are at this stage in our life that disability, or having an impairment or being excluded or not having access, will happen to all of us at some point in our lives. So this isn't a we and them issue. This isn't, this doesn't affect me. It absolutely will, if not today, but at some point in your life and everyone else around you.
No, absolutely. I agree. And you just gave us so many important things to think about, myself included. And I really appreciate you ending on that note and just joining us here today.
Thank you for having me. It's fantastic.
Wonderful. Our next guest on the podcast is a young advocate. He's currently an 11th grade student at Alexander Hamilton High School in Los Angeles. Born with cerebral palsy as a result of oxygen deprivation for 5 minutes at birth, Lucy has never let this stop her. She works tirelessly to make sure that kids like her who are living in the developing world also receive quality health and education and experience the joy of sport and participation in society. For the past 4 years, Lucy has worked closely with the Special Olympics and UNICEF USA to advocate for the welfare and inclusion of children living with disabilities across the globe. Lucy has served as the UNICEF USA's spokesperson for children with disabilities since 2013 and as the first ever official spokesperson of the Special Olympics UNICEF USA partnership since 2015. Lucy's goal is to raise over $1 million for kids with disabilities in the next year, and she's well on her way. Lucy has spoken at the United Nations, where she addressed the State Conference on the Convention on the Rights of the Persons with Disabilities. She has participated in 2 international field trips to Jamaica and Brazil with Special Olympics and UNICEF USA. Lucy met with young people in schools, clinics, and sporting events. Lucy has spent significant time in Washington, D.C. meeting with key officials, including President Obama and over 55 sitting U.S. senators, to advocate for people with disabilities. She has spoken to over 11,000 students at 25 schools. Lucy competed in the 2014 Special Olympics USA Games in swimming, where she won 2 gold, 1 silver, and 1 bronze. She has been featured in People.com and Teen Vogue, as well as many other print television outlets. And I actually had the pleasure of hearing from Lucy at a fireside chat recently, and I simply had to invite her back onto the podcast to speak. So, Lucy, it's possible that some of our audience members have actually heard you speak at one of your many speaking engagements. But for those who are on the podcast who have not had the chance to speak to you, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
So, I'm the spokesperson for children with disabilities and UNICEF and the spokesperson also for the partnership between UNICEF and Special Olympics. And I don't want to see any children die of preventing a vocal coverage that you can prevent. And I love children so much because they're the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, and your passion for children and UNICEF's work actually brought you on not just one field visit to see UNICEF programming, but two. What were some of the things that you saw?
So I went to Jamaica and Brazil, and I got to see and meet a bunch of wonderful children, and I got to help the children and see what they got to do in class. In Jamaica, I got to go in their classrooms and see what they got to do, and then I got to play with them outside, and which was awesome. And they had, the kids doing things, and I got to.
Great. And what about Brazil?
Meanwhile, I was in Brazil, they had a day, a sports day for the kids. So I got to play sports all day with the kids, which was really cool. And I got to compete in swimming, and I got to play a male, which was also really cool. And I got to do the Healthy Athlete program, which was amazing, which is like when they do the health care for the athlete. You know, every athlete go through the whole health care thing and everything. And that was very, very cool.
To switch gears a little bit here, I remember the first time that I heard you speak, you commented on the role of language. Word choice is sometimes viewed, especially in social change work, as something that's not important. Oftentimes I hear people say that words don't matter and words are not a good avenue for social change. What about you? What are your thoughts? Do you believe that words matter?
Yes, because words are very important to use correctly and to know how to use them. I went to my middle school, which had 600 kids in it, and I was in the special day program, and I was in 6 classes a day, but then there was one classroom for only special needs kids, and when I found out that it was called a MR class, which is a classroom for mentally retarded children, I hated that and wanted to change it, and I did to an IG class, which is a classroom for intellectually disability kids, and in high school, we did our campaigns, and I had kids, all my friends, sign posters and banners and everything saying not to use the R word anymore.
Wow, Lucy, that's such a powerful example and a very replicable one, that you started with your community, which is actually something Cara was talking about before. Starting with our immediate environment and just asking questions and really seeing how the wording that's used in our classrooms and our communities, how is that conducive to supporting a better environment for children, and just going to our friends and fellow students or fellow neighbors, whoever it might be, and working with them to see where we can make a difference and change. And I think that's wonderful that you're able to work with your school to make the language much more inclusive, and you noticed something that was wrong and really stood up for it. And I think that's really, really wonderful. And wondering if you actually have alternative suggestions as well as ways that our audience can continue to support children with disabilities.
Help, you know, children with disabilities, and love them and know that they are just like everyone else, and, you know, it doesn't matter if they have a disability or not, they have the same as everyone else. And accept and include kids with disabilities and kids without disabilities, no matter what, because everybody's equal. Nobody's different.
I think you're exactly right. A child is a child no matter what. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lucy.
You're very welcome.
Well, there you have it. I want to thank you listeners at home. Let's continue to work together. In addition to the wonderful insight that both Kara and Lucy provided here today, I also want to encourage you to, one, be mindful of your language as well as the language of your peer groups. As Lucy mentioned before, the language might not only offend others, but it can also normalize harmful social norms and actions. For instance, you may have noted that throughout the podcast, we were intentional to use the phrase children with disabilities instead of handicapped or disabled child, because a child is a child first. Second, UNICEF has a fantastic publication that I encourage you to check out. It does a really wonderful job of breaking down the issue, and it's entitled, It's About Ability, an Explanation of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And lastly, you may already know that April 4th is International Day for Mind Awareness and Assistance in Mind Action. It's as simple as marking your calendar to find a existing social media campaign or creating content of your own to spread the word amongst your networks. So make sure you have that noted in your calendars and agendas. Great, so with that, we'll see you on our next podcast.
For more information, check out unicefusa.org/endtrafficking.